a whore. She looked at him, and he was glad that all she could see in the reflective gold coating of his helmet visor was a mirror image of herself. Good, he thought, feeling his cheeks burning with unrepressed fury at his memories. At last she said, I'll help you.
Help me?
With your work here. I've got nothing much else to do. The nanosuits work fine, and they don't need any maintenance to speak of. I'll help you dig. He was surprised at her offer, but he heard himself reply immediately, No, you'll just make difficulties for yourself.
They can't make trouble for me, she said.
I don't live on Earth, remember? I'm a citizen of Selene. I'm free. Albuquerque, University of New Mexico. The paperless office is still nothing more than a distant daydream, Jamie said to himself. No matter how hard he tried to keep his office neat and tidy, the clutter always crept in to drown him. His office was no bigger than any of the others along the corridor of the Planetary Sciences Department building. Its door bore a modest sign, J. Waterman, Scientific Director, Mars Program. Inside, the office had space only for a regular university-issue desk of genetically engineered faux maple littered with papers, a bookcase stuffed with reports and folders, and a single plastic chair for visitors. The room had a window that looked out at the elevated interstate highway that ran through the heart of Albuquerque. This early in the morning, the rush hour traffic was just beginning to build up. Jamie had come in early to try to get some work done before his conference call was scheduled. He squeezed around his desk and slid into the swivel chair, booted up his desktop computer. He shook his head at the litter that threatened to engulf him. Got to clean this place up, he thought, as the computer ran through its self-check and then announced with a sharp beep that it was ready for work. Scanning the morning schedule, he saw that he had more than 2 hours before the conference call would come through. He started to review the latest reports from the teams on Mars. It's been nearly 2 years, he realized. 2 years since I left Mars. 2 years since Jimmy died. Skydiving. Of all the stupid things a teenager could do, he had to get his kicks by jumping out of an airplane. Why? Because his father had, years before. But I did it because I had to. It was part of my training for the Mars mission. I didn't do it for fun. The Russians wouldn't okay me for the mission if I didn't jump. I wasn't there to guide Jimmy, to make him understand, to protect him. I wasn't there for my son, or for Vijay. I know it's hit her hard. She tries to put a good face on it, pretends she's gotten over it, for my sake. She doesn't want me to see how she's hurting. But I know the pain is there. I feel it. Mothers get sick when their sons die. They wither away. They get cancer. He shook his head, trying to clear away the past. Focus on today, he told himself. This morning. The exploration of Mars was proceeding slowly. Not like those breathtaking, heady weeks when they had first landed, when every day seemed to bring an exciting new discovery. Now the exploration went more slowly. That's the way science works, Jamie told himself. You break through into a new area, new ideas, and it's mind-blowing. But then you get bogged down in digging out the details, searching for the clues, building up the evidence. It takes time exploring a whole world. The original Mars base had been at the edge of the Tharsis Highlands, but once they discovered the lichen clinging precariously to life at the floor of Tithonium Chasma, and Jamie discovered the ancient ruins notched into a cleft in the cliffs there, they moved the base to the canyon floor and enlarged it. A smaller base had been established almost halfway across the planet in the enormous impact crater called Hellas Basin, but Jamie knew that they couldn't afford to keep it going. Nearly 300 men and women were working on Mars, resupplied regularly by flights from Earth and the lunar station of Selene. That's about 100 more than we can maintain on our current funding, he admitted silently. Yet we don't know much more about the Martians than we did 20 years ago, Jamie grumbled silently, when I first glimpsed the remains of their cliff dwellings. Just that they're gone. Wiped out in the same cataclysm that killed off the dinosaurs here on Earth 65 million years ago.
an intelligent species, destroyed by the impersonal, implacable crash of a meteor big enough to blow away Mars's atmosphere and wipe out all life more complex than those hardy little lichens. They never knew what hit them, Jamie thought. Then he corrected himself. They knew. They realized that death had come screaming out of the sky. They were intelligent enough to understand. But they didn't have the level of technology to do anything about it. All they could do was die. Christ, he muttered. I'm getting morose in my old age. Death and dying is all I think about anymore. At least we've got those big telescopes watching for asteroids heading toward Earth. We can spot them years in advance. We can send rockets out to them, divert them away from a collision course. We won't be wiped out the same way the dinosaurs were, the way the Martians were. With a shake of his head, he turned his attention to the morning's reports. There was a lengthy analysis of the lichen that lived in the rocks strewn along the valley floor. Jamie scanned the abstract, frowning, then studied the graphs that summarized the author's findings. The lichen are dying off, he saw. Slowly, slowly. But there's less and less water vapor in the atmosphere. Less water to keep them alive. Mars is dying. The whole planet is dying. Jamie leaned back in his chair and rubbed his aching eyes. Who isn't dying? He asked himself. His phone buzzed. Startled, Jamie glanced at his desktop clock and saw that more than 2 hours had passed since he'd arrived at his office. I've just pissed away 2 hours, he scolded himself. The phone buzzed again. Thoroughly disgusted with the news about the lichen and his own failing, Jamie tapped the phone's keypad. The face of the president of the Navajo Nation appeared on the flat screen mounted on the wall to his right. She was older than Jamie, her hair dead white, pulled back off her face and tied into a long queue that draped over her shoulder. She was wearing a plain blouse of light tan, with turquoise and coral beads sewn along the edge of the collar. Her face was wrinkled, as weathered as the mesas of the Navajo land where she lived, but her dark eyes sparkled with warmth and lively intellect. She had the same broad cheekbones and stocky build as Jamie. He glanced again at the digital clock and grinned, despite himself. She's right on time. Unusual for a Navajo. Ya'ate, Jamie said, dipping his chin slightly. Ya'ate, she replied. It is good. Our friend in Boston is late. The president smiled. He must be learning Navajo ways. They both laughed. Everything goes well for you? Jamie asked. Almost everything. Almost. With a shrug, she replied, The Anglos are trying to buy more of the reservation's land. They say they need it for the people who were driven from their homes by the big floods. If we don't sell, they say they'll go to court and take the land anyway. Refugees. Jamie knew that the greenhouse warming that had flooded coastal cities and driven out millions of homeless refugees was also bringing rains to the lands of the Navajo people, turning stark brown desert into inviting green pastures. White politicians and real estate developers coveted those newly green acres. The pressure to open the reservation to settlement by the refugees was growing every day, every hour. There's plenty of open land in other places, the president said. But they're putting a lot of pressure on... The phone buzzed once more, interrupting her. Jamie touched the keypad and his wall screen split into two images. The new one showed C. Dexter Trumbull in his office high up in one of Boston's financial district towers. Morning, Dex said curtly. Each time Jamie saw Dex, he was struck all over again by how much the former geologist had grown to resemble his late father. Dex Trumbull still had all his hair, but his handsome face had thinned over the years since he and Jamie had worked together on the second Mars expedition, and those blue-green eyes of his seemed sharper, more penetrating, as if he knew things that no one else knew. His father's eyes, scheming and demanding. How's the weather in Boston? Jamie could see a briskly clear blue sky through the window at Dex's back. You haven't seen the news? Dex asked. This morning's news from Washington. No, said Jamie. The president zeroed out the Mars program. Jamie felt it like a sharp blow to his heart.
She's zeroed out.